Welcome to the Fallout Lorecast, the podcast that explores the boundaries of our knowledge about the world of Fallout. Wastelanders and adventurers and vault dwellers and anybody else tuning into either of the feeds, the Fallout Lorecast or the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, welcome back to the show. We're doing something a little weird this week. We've got me and Lotus from the Elder Scrolls Lorecast and Jessica Starr from the Starfield Lorecast. This is like a, I don't know, three of us coming together for different Bethesda things to talk about mods and an awesome event that happened this last weekend. And that's why we've got Jessica on, because she was involved with the Community Creations Con that happened this last weekend. It was 2 days of multiple hours of different mod creators, the Fallout Wiki, a bunch of different people getting together who are part of this community, who love these games, who are taking their own time to work on adding things for you and me to enjoy. It's such a cool thing. And on top of it, raising money for charity. They raised, what, $2,700, I think it was, for Make-A-Wish?
Yes, just about. Yeah, it was around $2,300 total.
$2,300. That's okay. Awesome. I know I saw some numbers online. But yeah, you can hear Jessica there. That's Lotus. Lotus, welcome back. Hope you're doing well. But hey, we've got Jessica to talk to, so I'm going to just go right to her. Jessica, welcome to the show. I just skipped over Lotus. Everybody knows
who
Lotus is.
Hey, Tom. Lotus. Greet everybody. Happy to be here. Yeah, this is awesome. So you want to talk about C3 a little bit, how it started, what we do with it?
Yes. I'm most interested in getting into the nitty gritty and talking about some of the different mods and some of the different people you interviewed and all that. But can you give us just a brief overview about what this convention is? When did it start? How did you get involved? All of that?
Sure thing. So C3 stands for Community Creations Con. C3s, you know, works out. And it was actually started, this was the third year as well. I started 3 years ago, actually as a Fallout for Hope initiative to begin with. Our mutual friend, Ken, as you know, often, like when he's working on projects, we were doing things regularly for, you know, for Fallout for Hope, for St. Jude and stuff. And we'd bring in a lot of creators and YouTubers and stuff. But we also had interested mod authors. And, you know, what do we do with that? How do we show their mods as part of this for charity? And we're like, well, what if we focused on a community creations con? Because it was around the time that creations were actually rolling out. You know, we already had Creation Club, but creations were just coming out for Skyrim, you know, and then, of course, now Starfield and now Fallout, you know? So we're like, well, let's do that. So we put together this panel. That year, there were like 24 of them. It was the inaugural one. We brought in groups like Fallout London, of course, early Sky Oblivion, stuff like that. Just kind of passionate modders, mod teams, artists, animators, writers, voice actors, and designers in the Bethesda community that kind of didn't fall into the regular like streaming bucket.
Yeah,
you know, because streamers, they're usually YouTubers and people on Twitch. You know, that's the majority of it. So we're like, well, let's do a convention. And this was also still just after a lot more things had been digital and online only for a while. And these people hadn't really, you know, been able to get together as a group gathering. So that's the origin of C3. 3 years ago, it was that February. Then we did C3 2024, was 25. Yeah, the 24th was the first. 25 was last year. Again, just a wonderful convention. And at that point, Fallout for Hope, because they're working on, you know, we've got 2 to 3 fundraisers a year that they do. And then in-person events starting last year, got a bit busy. So Kate Aces from the Independent Fallout Wiki, and Eleonora started doing more of the organizing and such. And the people from a couple of mod groups, you know, Nexus stayed with us and worked with us and a few others. But they kind of took over the organizing from Ken and Dan's, who had done it previously. And even though I was there as part of Fallout for Hope, I came in initially just to help stream. You know, the first year I did the Verified Creators panel for Bethesda, you know, with Eleonora and Shu and Train Wiz and Kingath and you know, kind of, hey, this is what the verified creations are, you know, and talking to the modders, because it was a brand new thing. And they're like, this is why we jumped onto it. This is what we're doing. This is before Kingath had released, you know, some of the stuff that has really kind of shown what a DLC size mod actually can be like.
Yeah.
So we were just kind of launching it. So it was great to do that interview with them. And then I just, you know, I stayed each year. I've been hosting the Independent Fallout Wiki panel. This year I did not only the Independent Fallout Wiki panel, where we just kind of talk about resources for modders, what they're up to, community stuff, but I also worked with Alexa Rader, who is working on the Fallout Upstate. It's a fan series starting out as like a fan film idea, but they're going to do it as a serial. Mm-hmm. So that was really fun. And then I got to talk with Fallout Unity and the folks from Fallout Unity. They are basically doing a San Francisco recreation. That's going to be really, really interesting. Yeah, I'm excited about that. So there's a lot to it.
Yeah, there is a lot to it. And thank you for the introduction on that. So now that everybody's caught up on what this is and why they should tune in next year, I know we probably should have pushed it a little bit before I wasn't as included into, and until you and I got together and talked during the host crossover thing and you mentioned right. it. And I was like, oh, that's coming up. That's right. But yeah, so I was excited to catch parts of it this weekend and thought that we would have an awesome opportunity to kind of go through some of the things and talk about individually each of the different groups or different projects that were mentioned in order to give people kind of some highlights and something to go look up when they've got some time to, you know, dig into what's
I'd
going on.
I'd love to go through those because we don't have a central location for C3. You know, when it comes to getting the word out about it, like you said, we try to mention on podcasts, of course, I do and others do. We put it on the socials, mm-hmm. but there's not necessarily a central place for it. We have the same things with a lot of things. Luckily, I mean, as always, Bethesda's very willing to support, you know, so they'll often retweet, reshare on Instagram and stuff like that, just like they did for our StarCon, our Starfield convention back in January.
Right.
Which I don't know if you caught any of that, but I got interview Jan Johns and Wes Johnson, two amazing voice actors, and that was really good time.
Yeah. Oh, and today, the day that we're recording this, so there's all this new Starfield news, which I'm sure everyone's just buzzing about. But we'll get to some of that at the end of the episode. But here, let's get into it. It kicked off on Saturday at 10 a.m. Eastern with the kickoff presentation. And then it moved into, we immediately get into mods. And the first mod section of the show was about Serana Dialogue and Ash Crystal Heart. The description here, I'll read the descriptions and then you can chime in with more details if you want. A look behind two acclaimed Skyrim companion projects centered on character-driven storytelling, reactive dialogue, and evolving relationships. Everybody loves the companions for Bethesda games, and this has been one of those things a lot of people have invested a lot of modding time into. In fact, at this point, we've had so much modding in Skyrim that you have characters that were modded in that people, every time they load up a new game of Skyrim, they have to include
incredibly attached
to those characters. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Like the blue cat, Inigo, is that his name?
Inigo, yes. Yes. He's probably Inigo's the most popular mod character ever, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, he is definitely very, very popular. There are quite a few others, Sophia, number like that. So this was a Serana Dialogue expansion, a new stuff for her, and Ash Crystal Heart, which is a new and original companion. Mm-hmm. So this was redone with a lot of dialogue for Serana, repurposing lines and some written only, no AI voice acting in it. But Eleonora hosted both the beginning kickoff there, showing some of her mods she's been working on, and then she moved in and hosted this. To show the new dialogue.
Right.
Then we went into Fallout Appalachia.
Yes.
Fallout Appalachia is a fun one. So, and these are for our Fallout 4 friends listening right now. So recreating the Appalachian wasteland that we have in 76, but recreating it in Fallout 4. So what would that be like now, you know, 200 years
right.
after the events of 76? Now, admittedly, we don't have a canon resolution to what's going on in the Appalachian wasteland right now. We don't know how it's going to wrap or if it ever is. You know, Fallout 76 could go on forever.
Sure. What if it went on for 200 years? Because in the game, it like they push back another year every time there's new updates or whatever. They're like, okay, and then next year happened and then this group moved in and this crazy thing happens. So, which is unlike many games where it's just perpetually the same time, even more and more stuff is in the game.
It like ESO. Changes.
Yeah, ESO. Correct me if I'm wrong.
It's a huge issue ESO has. Yeah. It's like, now this has been a very busy year of the Interregnum. That I know calendars weren't super accurate during this time period, but good Lord, how many possible things could you fit? Like at this point, we're going to have an expansion per day of the calendar year in ESO.
Expansions do you have in ESO at this point?
Oh my gosh.
I believe if you start including seasons, we're going into 10 because we've had like a half season and then so we're in.
Yeah, and then sometimes you get like a smaller zone that's added
in
somewhere.
Yeah, and we're in year 12, so like the first year didn't come with an expansion because then like it went into consoles, but then they've switched off the chapter thing into, well, now it's seasons, which are basically just a different way of distributing the chapter, and at a reduced cost, so to speak. So yeah, it's one of those things where it's just like so many of Bethesda's games have so many of these expansions, and then you add all these community ones. It's just like, no wonder people spend like 50,000 hours with these things.
Live service is so different, and there's so much to see. Yes, in 76, which hasn't been running quite as long as ESO, we're up to, I think, 24 official named updates, like 68 regular updates. And in that, we have moved forward 3.5 years, basically. Not every named update has moved forward a year.
Yeah, but not everyone.
Ones that add quest content do. So, of course, right. Wastelanders did, Steel Dawn, Steel Rain did.
Yep.
And I believe we went to 2105. It was either with the Valley or, yeah, I think it was about a year ago. We went to 2105.
That
and that's where
right.
we still are officially on the Pip-Boy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Say, I think that's the last time I had logged in because I'm a few patches behind in 76. So I think around the Valley was the last time I have jumped on. So
The new stuff is pretty cool.
I guess I'm still in the current year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot has happened this year because we got Burning Springs, you know, we became ghoulified and all that. And that's all happened in 2105. So it might've actually been with the ghoul update when they rolled that out or a little before.
It was something like that.
Anyway,
yeah.
Fallout Appalachia is a very cool creation. So he's done a really good job of recreating the areas using, for instance, the Nuka World texture kit, to kind of represent what we got in Burning Springs with Ohio, and doing approximations, changing the lighting. Like, there's already mods out there to make your lighting in Fallout 4 more like 76 with the slightly warmer values and a little bit heavier center light, you know, things like that. So, but he can't actually story-wise, you know, have anything canon yet. So he's very much creating the areas and filling it out with stuff and kind of waiting to see what happens as it goes. But it is available to download and try, I believe, as a work in progress.
That's so much to do because, I mean, Fallout 76's map is four times the size, five times the size of Fallout 4 at this point. That's a lot. That's a lot to cover if you're going to do every little piece of that and then extrapolate 200 years into the future about like, okay, well, what does it look like now and who's here and what's going on? And like, that is quite the project.
It really is.
Yeah. So
it's fun to see those things grow.
Because like, I enjoy 76, but Fallout 4 is my favorite in the series. So like, when I read about this one, I was like, ooh, this seems very much up my alley. Because again, I'm picky choosy when it gets to some of the mods and stuff like that. And I really like the creations that add story stuff as opposed to some of the other stuff. So like, I kind of can't wrap my head around that much surface area being added to Fallout.
It's a lot.
Honestly, it's kind of wild.
It's a lot. And this is by Desire. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yes.
Yeah, is the modder.
Yep.
Yeah, Desire. And to go back to the whole lore thing, there's across the board, these modders pull so much influence and inspiration from the existing lore and then try to extrapolate that out in creative ways in these mods. And it's always interesting to see what they do. Yes, it's not canon, but it's enjoyable because of just the sheer amount of love of detail and love for these worlds that so many of these creators bring to it. And I think that's important. And it's worth noting here, right? That like, you're not wasting your time by playing a mod just because it's not canon. Now, you get what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I stand by the camp of I don't feel like if you're having fun, you're really wasting time. That's supposed to be the point of games,
right? So, sure.
As I long say, it's like, oh, it's fun. Then I think it works. It doesn't necessarily need to canon continue the story because a lot of times they factor this stuff in over time later on. Bethesda's
sometimes you're right
for kind of incorporating this stuff.
Yeah,
you know, when things are received well, oftentimes it's like, oh, maybe we can integrate that a bit, even if they put their own twist on it or something like that. It doesn't need to be verbatim, but since they work with so many of the people in the community and the creators and stuff like that, a lot of times it just kind of becomes like a group effort and you almost become part of the team for your brief little portion.
Yeah,
absolutely. A lot of the stories with mods, the stories in particular that are created, are made so that they can tie into things that are happening in the current timeline being set in. So that's what's a little bit different about something in the future like this. But at the same time, it does give you that unknown, which then gives you freedom. like in the TV show, you know, when you can say, for instance, the Fallout TV show, oh, it's been 9 years since Fallout 4, you know, it's been 16 years since Fallout New Vegas. And so they may not explain exactly what happened, so we kind of fill it in logically. So, of course, you can do something like that with Fallout Appalachia as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
that makes sense.
Yeah, we've got a lot get to. So let's move on to the next one. Fallout Chicago, another location that a lot of people talk about in the lore as being a place where the Enclave might still be, or the Brotherhood. There's all this, you know, speculation and rumor, because some of that is mentioned in the lore. This one is described as Fallout Chicago is a DLC sized expansion to Fallout New Vegas. Join the team while they showcase the project. And this is the what was in the little banner for the actual
episode. Just a lot of new world spaces around Chicago. So they're, once again, fleshing it out. A lot of these aren't complete overhauls, but they act like DLCs that you would travel to.
Right.
You know, so whereas an overhaul would change the character creator, maybe the start screen, all that, like Fallout London did, or like Sky Oblivion has done, and other things like that, Enderal. In this case, it's simply a DLC that you would travel to with a character you've made. So it's not
like going to Nuka World, like
exactly
right, like a little subset of the map somewhere else, and then you load into it. The Fallout Wiki, which we'll get to in a little bit, mentions has a description. It says Fallout Chicago's DLC sized expansion to critically acclaimed Fallout New Vegas, where you'll set out to solve pre-war mysteries and post-war politics between the Union Mob, Midwest Brotherhood, and other factions. Chicago is fraught with dangers and betrayal around every corner. Do you have what it takes to make it out on your mission? Hell, this was supposed to be a side job after all. So it feels like it's got some of that like Chicago gangster sort of thing going on, maybe something like that. So this is fun. It's in fact, there's a whole group of modders who are part of this. Grimdos, Web Productions, Drax, Wombats, Brickstar, Hermes, I think I'm pronouncing it. It has a three for the second E, but Hermes is probably Chrysog, maybe Cadminta. The names are getting harder to pronounce as we go.
I like how it's steadily just devolving into you struggling to say them.
This is everyone who's listened to any of my podcasts knows that pronouncing words is not one of my great qualities. And Steel Hardburger are some of the credits on this, according to the wiki. But that seems fun. I'm going to Chicago in the Fallout universe. It feels totally appropriate. It's one of those places that I think all of us have probably thought about at some point over the years of really cool to go to Chicago in Fallout and see what that's like. So sounds like it's just kind of a small little this sounds like a lot of work. This is holy moly.
A lot of these are the amount of work that goes into them. That's why some of these projects take, even if they're not full overhauls, they take so long because you're creating a world space, you're creating characters, you're creating quests, you're incorporating all of that.
In fact, that is, that's something I did want to bring up during this episode, because I traditionally for the Lorecast type shows don't talk about mods very often, and part of that was that personally it's hard to play lots of different things and then think back on something 3 years later and go, wait, was that a mod or is that canon? Did I just replace actual information in my brain about canon things that people care about on my show and the reason why they're listening to my show with something somebody else made up? You know, like, I don't want to get confused. So there's a little bit of me just being cautious there for myself. But also, if you go back 10 years, 15 years, and some of these types of mods were in their infancy, stuff like Sky Oblivion, which we're going to talk about, Skywind. These types of big mods were just pipe dreams, and none of them came to fruition. And some of them thought, oh, we'll be able to knock something out in a year or two and then get it out there. And then it didn't happen. So there was this, if you've been part of the community that long, like we have, there was this feeling of like, those are fun ideas, but they're never actually going to work out, right? And in recent years, we've seen more and more of these large projects actually work out or get close to finishing and being released. And so my mindset has changed on this. And I feel like there is more reason to focus on these as, and kind of like Lotus was saying too, like sometimes the developers will actually take cues from the audience. There is a dialogue in this community between the developers and the fans and the people playing and the people modding. It's not as simple as, here, I wrote a novel, you get to read it, we're done. You know, like there's more going on there. So that was a big word salad, but I think that there is more substance to this because these mod teams have really proven that they stick it out and they really do bring these two things to fruition. Not every time, but a lot of them do and have. So that's worth saying.
Go ahead.
One thing I really appreciate about that is Todd actually acknowledged that in an interview with Ryan McCaffrey a few months ago. And he mentioned Fallout London specifically, and he congratulated them on just the amount of work it takes to finish, complete, and, you know, bring that to fruition, because it is. It's an incredible amount of work. The truth is that a lot of these projects, as you mentioned, not that they're pipe dreams, but with the length of time, things can change.
Yeah.
Game engines can change. People can move on. You know, these are almost always volunteer. Well, they are, pretty much are always volunteers.
Right. Well, that's the other thing is that, like, nobody's doing this because they make a paycheck every other week from it. Mm-hmm. And so when other things in life come about and you go, well, guys, I got to step back, I've got other priorities. That's just natural, you know?
Right. Right. But things like the Capital Wasteland project or a Project Mojave, for instance. Project Mojave was recreating New Vegas in Fallout 4. And that had to slow down because some people got pulled away. A couple started working with Double 11 and like HCX Grill and Fried Turkey. They're model creators and creature creators and such. They work for Double 11 now on Fallout 76, but they had been working with that team.
Yeah.
And so people get moved around and they, you know, they get new jobs that pull them away. But a lot of times what's nice is that if they are in a state where you can at least see parts of it, those get released. So, for instance, out of the Capital Wasteland project, we've had the Point Lookout released. We can travel to Point Lookout and a version of the Pit. I don't think that one was complete, but, you know, you can download a version of the Pit in Fallout 4 to see a lot of it.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, interesting. Really
cool. And it's when these things do get completed or even just like enough to show functionally. It's funny because, to your point, it's not really coming across as a paycheck, but at the same time, when you can show that I was part of this, you essentially just made yourself a programming resume that people are playing en masse. And
then
when it's adopted, it's just like, it's brutal because of, you know, unfortunately how rough the video game industry is at the moment, where so many, you know, studios get shuttered and you don't even get to see like all their hard work. This is almost the inverse of that, where it's like, well, yeah, nobody's shuttering us, and I ended up getting a resume out of this because nothing's NDA'd. It was just us and our quote-unquote pipe dream, and it ended up becoming a real thing. And it's just like, my hobby just ended up becoming a career choice for me just because it's so difficult to get these things created.
Yeah, it takes a lot. The next one on the list, this was at 2 p.m. on Saturday, was the Modular Melee Weapons mod. This is by PRA. Fallout 4 melee weapons that you can transform from a simple knife to a glaive or a pickaxe. Allows you to change handles, heads, and more. This seems genius. It seems like something that would have or should have just been in the base game. You could swap out parts on your guns. Why not swap out parts on your melee weapons? Totally makes sense. I'm totally down for this.
Yeah. Yeah, and that one looks great. One of the neat things, too, is that while some of the showcases we talked about so far were large projects with full characters and quests and stuff like that, a lot of them that we show are also just specific weapons, you know, smaller mods. One thing that a lot of modders focus on, especially when starting, tends to be weapons, because it's the kind of thing you can learn to model, you can learn to make attachments, and you can grow from that. Mm-hmm. And Pra's done a lot more. But
yeah, you don't have to design the entire city of Chicago setting out. Like,
exactly.
Save that for later. Work on one little thing at a time. Yeah, build a shovel that you can hit somebody with. Good.
Yep.
Good to go.
It's funny, you mentioned, Lotus, about using it as a resume as well. One thing to jump ahead a little bit, you know, we went to the survival mode overhaul, and then, of course, we talked about speaking with the wiki. One thing we brought up talking with the wiki is that they have mod author pages there. And I actually asked, do mod authors use this as a resume? And I was told yes, that has been done.
Yeah.
And on the wiki, you can create, you know, your own mod author page. It can list all the mods you've worked on, mods you've contributed to. One of the great things about it is that it's cross-referenced, much like IMDb. You know, this is a modder's IMDb, because Nexus, of course, has the largest number of mods and modders there. But it can be a little bit more difficult to cross-reference in an organized fashion. And that's something on the wiki you can absolutely do. Like, this person worked on Sim Settlements too. You know, they worked on Fallout the Frontier, and they've done these five weapon mods. It's really fun.
Yeah, so yeah.
That is a real thing.
Yeah, you mentioned the survival mod overhaul. This was at 3 p.m. An upcoming complete overhaul of survival mode in Fallout 4 featuring custom UI, a full disease system overhaul, and many other cool features. This is something... Okay, so this is one of those things that I've been toying with in my own playthroughs of games is implementing like these really extreme survival mods, not just doing regular survival mode in Skyrim or Fallout 4, but pulling in some of these mods and getting all the minutia of, well, now I have this disease and that means this and this and this. And now I got to, you know, like all the little details of that. And I think that stuff is super cool. It's the sort of thing I've flirted with, but I haven't committed to doing like a playthrough with, but I'm super interested in the way that people continue to sculpt that experience, especially with the success of survival games over the last decade taking off and all the advancements and improvements we've seen in that genre now being kind of used to inform modding on this level. I think that's super cool.
People crave that experience and they crave being able to tailor it. I mean, that's what 76 was when it came out. The survival aspects of it have been incredibly minimized over time because plenty of people didn't want to keep
PvP?
Having
to fight. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, it's still possible, but very, very controlled.
I know. Yes. Yeah, so one of my friends was trying to get like the PvP achievement. And I'm like, I don't even know how to activate this anymore. It's so like... Find, well, are you sure you want to fight? Are you sure? Are you really sure? Are you definitely really sure? I'm like, okay, I get it. It's not really part of the game anymore.
Don't double turn off passive mode, take off your armor, and you can get it before too long. You know, just take, I think, 10 player kills, maybe.
Something like that. It's not super long, but...
The fun one is resing characters for PvP, too, making them jump off high ledges and getting down there and resing them in the water. Yeah. Yep.
Very thin pool.
Very fun.
So this one is by a legend. Is it 6 VI V1? It's hard to tell with the font.
Yeah, a legend V1, but we just V1. Call me a legend.
A legend. Yeah. So I want to call out all the mod authors as I can as I get through this list. That seems super cool. And the next up on the list is, as you mentioned, the independent Fallout Wiki, which wiki writers are doing the Lord's work because. I mean, heck, we do lore shows and there are plenty of times where I'm like, okay, I need to find something. Where's the first place I'm going to look? I'm going to check
the wiki.
Check
yourself.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. It was this quest in this game. Okay. Let me go look at that again. Let me load something up. Let me take a look. Okay. What did they say about it? Oh, with that reference to a holotape in this location. Okay, great. Well, what was the text on that? Oh, I can just click the link and read it. Thank you very much. I can check my sources because it's a wiki and it references all the sources, you know, like, that stuff is super, super useful. And the fact that they're doing an independent wiki, this isn't tied to other companies with their own agendas and all of that, is very cool. So, and this is one that you actually got to run this one. You got to do the interview on this.
Yes, I got to talk with Kate Aces, who is one of the overseers at the wiki, Doc Blubbin, who is one of the overseers in charge of community specifically at the wiki, and Astral Abraxas, Anita, who... She's a great artist. She does a lot of art for the wiki, and she's also their social media manager. So wonderful to talk to them. Like I said, I've done it the last 3 years, you know, really when the wiki started. So they have been around 4 years in just a couple of months that they've had the independent Fallout wiki. There is a group of independent wikis that work together, and they all, almost like the old web ring, where they support each other, they link to each other.
GeoCities? Links, so. Oh my god, yeah, we're exactly. So old.
Angel Fire?
Oh no.
Cool, I'm turning to dust as we speak.
They've got little animated GIFs all over the place, just randomly on the page.
Less blinky GIFs on the independent wikis, for sure.
Low-res, 256 colors.
Yeah, but UESP is obviously part of that. They're an independent wiki. It's been interesting seeing other wikis become independent too. Because a lot of wikis, you know, they have a governing board, they have staff, they have rules about how edits work, and a bit, you know, there's structure. It's very important there's structure. People aren't just editing willy-nilly. So they split off. So like, for instance, the Cyberpunk wiki, I believe, just recently left fandom and became the independent Cyberpunk wiki this past month. So, you know, yeah, and sometimes there are multiple wikis for a property, you know, for instance, you know, for Fallout, of course, Nukipedia, people are aware of. But the independent Fallout wiki, very viable, and they specialize in different things. There's a decent amount of overlap because originally part of it was a fork, but a lot of it is new information, edited information. One project that they're doing with independent Fallout wiki right now is adding NPCs and action portraits. So when you look up characters in the game, you can actually see them doing what they do. Are they fishermen? You know, do they constantly walk in a circle in Diamond City? We're getting pictures of them doing that.
Nice.
So it's really fun. So that was wonderful to talk to them.
Yeah, and good on them.
And they focus a lot on mods and having that mod database and modder database and community database. One thing that needs fleshed out are more things on Fallout podcasts, because a few of us are on there.
Hey.
But I think more should be.
Yeah, absolutely. There's lots of Fallout podcasts. There's lots of Elder Scrolls podcasts. Everybody should be represented on these types of pages. And one of the things I gathered from watching this was not just their attention to detail and, you know, they care about and all of that, but just the sheer level of like personal commitment. Like it's like they found their thing. You know, like, and I'm sure people listen to our podcast and they're like, wow, those people found their thing. Podcast seems to fit them really well. I like what they do, that kind of thing. For this group, creating and maintaining a wiki, they found their spot, right? They plugged into the world. Right. This is exactly where they fit and they love it. And that is so cool to see.
It's a community. It really is. It's a community within a community. You know, some people have bowling leagues. Some people play bingo every Saturday. These people, they edit the wiki.
Right.
And, you know, share information about that, chat regularly. It does. It becomes a community of its own. And the Independent Fallout Wiki with the Discord is very much an active community, much like the Robots Radio Discord, which is a very active community.
Yeah, there are so many of those cool Discords that I pop in and I check them out, and then I'm like, okay, I'll jump back in there and chat some, and then I never do. And now I have a list of like hundreds of them, and I would never have enough time to participate in all the communities that I wish I could. But I love that that exists.
We only have so much time. Admin 6 Discords. It can be a lot sometimes.
I'm sure. Next, and we're getting close to the end of the first day, 5 p.m. Eastern, was the Skywind Showcase. And this is a project that has been happening behind the scenes. Every so often pops up, you get a little update or whatever. And this, I'm excited about this too, because for anybody who hasn't heard, this is the equivalent of something like Skyblivion, but for Morrowind, taking Morrowind and putting it into the Skyrim engine.
Yeah, for psychos like me.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to play through this, because going back and trying to play Morrowind, and we've talked about this before, Lotus, it feels very tedious. There's a level of
one of my favorite games of all time. It is a rough experience to subject someone to.
It's hard to get in.
Start with it.
It's hard to even just the sheer amount of reading that you need to do from the beginning, and then clicking on the highlighted word in the dialogue that takes you to the next screen, and then going, "Oh, well, did I read this already or not?"
I love the journal.
It's once you are in it and you're committed, I get it. It totally makes sense. But coming from this world where things have been streamlined or they're voice acted for you or whatever, it's hard. It's like committing to reading a novel at times. And there are whole moments where you will go from adventuring in the countryside and fighting monsters and finding a dungeon and picking up some cool loot to all of a sudden I'm in a village and I need to spend the next 30 minutes reading dialogue to figure out what I'm going to do next. And sometimes I just don't want to sit down and read a novel for 30 minutes before I go fight another monster in a dungeon, you know? So I get it.
You know, the journal idea, I also agree. I love it. It's just like such an in-world thing, as opposed to like, I'm going to go just check my quest log. Your quest log is what your character kept as a journal. To your point, though, you ever take a break from the game, you're trying to figure out where you are, and you need to read 752 pages of your journal.
Right?
It's going to take a while to figure out what quest you were on.
It is a little obtuse. But what they showed looked really cool. It absolutely translates into the Skyrim engine. A lot of the like very traditional Morrowind scenes and character types and that kind of stuff was all highlighted, and they're all walking around doing cool stuff. Yeah.
A wonderful job with it. And you can't bring over assets. One of the things about these recreating one of the previous games in a current engine is you really can't bring over assets except for where they're duplicated. So if there are versions of the asset in Skyrim, that versions of the one from Oblivion or Morrowind, they can use that. But if it's a new asset or even sound files in a lot of case, you can't. So they're recreating that. Or the font, for instance, is a licensed font. So they are using a slightly more readable, in my opinion, but an original font that was created for Skywind. On this mod, they're not going to bring in a Tribunal or Blood Moon to start. They're not bringing in those additional world spaces. but I can't imagine
why.
Right, one thing at a time.
Yeah.
But it's coming along quite well. And while there isn't an end date or launch date public yet, they are making good headway and they're always looking for more people. You can go over to, I believe it's TESRSkywind.com is their website as well, or just look up Skywind and
it'll come up.
You'll find it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they have a bunch of different stuff on there, some videos, a frequently asked questions section that answers a lot of the questions about it. And one of the questions that gets asked a lot to these mod creators is, when will it release? And the answer almost always across the board is, we don't know, but we're working on it. And when it's done, we'll put it out there. So it is one of those things. But like I said earlier in this episode, that does happen. These mods get to a place where they get released, or they get released in parts. And we're going to talk about that and some of the other stuff that comes up in a little bit. But after Skywind, you guys ended the day Saturday at 6 p.m. with Shadows of the Old World. It's a narrative-driven two-act quest mod for Fallout 4 that introduces the Underground, a post-war resistance fighting a shadowy pre-war cabal. This sounds fun. There's a world of opportunity out there beyond the typical 9-to-5, where purpose and grit come together, where American spirit and ingenuity are welcomed in places that could really use your skills and your experience. We're talking about the Peace Corps, with volunteers living and working in communities around the globe. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you to dig deeper, get your hands dirty, to go that extra mile, to rise to the occasion and meet challenges head on. And the love part? Comes from being part of something bigger than yourself, from building bonds that last a lifetime. It's knowing your hard work transforms lives, including your own. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries, learn about the benefits, and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve. It's time for that spring reset. I'm taking a look at everything in my closet and figuring out that, oh no, this absolutely needs to go. And it's about time I replace things so that my clothes aren't older than my 15-year-old. Now, you might think that they lasted that long because they were well made, but no, they're in terrible condition. Unlike the new jeans I just got from Quince. Jeans have always been my personal go-to because you can kind of wear them for lots of different things, but maybe they're not your thing. Maybe you're looking for, I don't know, 100% European linen with insanely soft flow knit active wear fabric. It's definitely getting warmer and their flow knit active wear is moisture wicking, anti-odor, and soft enough that you'll actually want to wear it every day. So pick out what you want. You can't go wrong because they have prices 50 to 60% less than similar brands. And like I said before, they are high quality. I continue to wear their clothes all the time. And I know that these new jeans are going to last me a lot better than the other things in my wardrobe. And on top of it, they look great. They're so comfortable. And I spent just as much on the jeans that I am now cleaning out of my wardrobe. So if you're looking for something better, just all around better, go check out Quince. So go do it right now. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Go to quince.com/falloutlore for free shipping and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. Go to quince.com/falloutlore for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/falloutlore.
Yes, it looks excellent. Babylonia hosted that panel. I believe that many of these panels will be made public. Some of them are being preserved. We're keeping all the VODs, the videos linked in our Discord, and many people will take and publish them on YouTube, at least the ones, you know, that kind of came out in a polished kind of way that you can do that with. So I have a feeling that Shadows of the Old World will be out there. And right now the VOD is, of course, available on Babylonia's page. Anyone who wants to join the Discord can see that.
Yeah, and the modder is Mystic. I started with the C. It's like I'm moving letters around all of a sudden. Mystic Rogue. thank you. Words are hard. So then Sunday comes around and we have the Skyblivion showcase. This is a mod that has been in the news a lot in the last year with hopes that it would launch in 2025. Got pushed back to this year. Still hopes it comes out at some point this year. And I know that they continue to make advancements
Rebel
on this.
Rebel Season team working on it very hard. Yes. Honestly, we were incredibly excited and felt privileged to have them come on and join us to catch people up on what had been happening with the mod, because as you mentioned, they had intended to release by the end of 2025. various real life things and just the difficulty and the sheer scale of the mod. Yeah,
the volume of work is just like staggering with this project.
Lotus, I'm sure you've kept up with a lot of the Skyblivion development.
Yes, and I was going to say, Revel is like such a great dude in general. Mm-hmm. And just seeing, as opposed to, good Lord, I don't know, I think it was 2 years ago when he guested on Tales to talk about the progress there. And then to see, I remember at the time, it was like, this is looking so impressive. And what they're showing now makes what they had then look almost just like, oh, so you had nothing originally just because it's come so far.
It's cool. I can't wait to see their take on things that's different from the remaster version, because I think both are going to find their niche in different ways. But there are things in the Skyrim engine, there's things the Skyrim engine does that I still miss from Oblivion Remastered.
Yes, and that's, I think, the biggest thing and why Rebel kind of like publicly was like, this doesn't need to be a competition. Like, which one do you actually want to support?
Right.
You can enjoy both.
Play
and
both.
See the different takes on how it works.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because the focus is not the same. And you can kind of just enjoy two different things, or you find the one that it's like, oh no, you know, I like that the focus was more on this, or the focus was more on,
right,
you know, this other thing. And the flavor to the remaster compared to Skyblivion is you're going to be able to tell the difference in creation, like the direction of the creators making it. And it's just going to be like so visible in that. And I think that is in and of itself almost making it a wholly unique game, even though it's technically just another version of the same game.
Right. Right. All right. So we've talked about Skyblivion a lot. I'm sure we'll have more to say once that gets even closer to release. The next one from that second morning, so that was 9 a.m. 10 a.m. we have Merry Modding Days. Updates on the holiday initiative Merry Modding Days, started by a group of modders to bring an advent calendar-like experience to modding. This is Veta and Green Foxel, and I didn't catch this one. It seems very interesting. What can you fill us in about this?
So they've been doing Merry Modding Days the last couple years, actually. A lot of it's the team from Conquered Stories working on it, but a number of modders jumping in with small mods for Merry Modding Days. Think of it like an advent calendar of mods.
Yeah, so every day you open up a little door and you get a new little mod that comes out.
Yep. Just as a quick little, like, overview of some of what they've done. So they did like lamplight usable lanterns for the holidays.
Nice.
Nuka menorah with Nuka-Cola bottles of various types.
Nice.
What else? A Sierra Madre vending machine. I'm just going over some of the ones from this last year.
Oh, that's so fun.
Settlement add-on for the holidays.
It's so fun to have, like, even thematically, they kind of match. And to have that as an initiative for a bunch of creative people to do all their own kinds of things is so fun, because you get to see the different thought processes and the things that they decided to do.
Yeah, they really add a lot. And they're bite-sized mods to an extent, but some of them have quests. There's one I think was called The Christmas that almost wasn't.
Okay.
Which was about helping a guy get the gift he needed, you know, for his family.
Now I want a super mutant in a Santa outfit. Oh, man.
You know, I mentioned that, but technically, Long 15, and you may have to, I don't know if you talked about Long 15 on the show at all, but that is a huge New Vegas, talking about DLC-sized mods, you know, that you wonder, are they going to come out or not? Long 15 is one of those. Long 15 is a DLC mod that was a little, I'm not going to say slept on, you know, a lot of people who play New Vegas regularly or up with the modding scene know it, but
right.
I highly recommend people to check it out.
Yeah.
It's PC only, but it is a full questline mod about the Long 15 highway.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I'm glad you brought that up too, because I think there are a lot of people who listen to our shows who they dabble in modding every so often. So like the hardcore mod community goes, oh yeah, I've heard about that. I tried it out or whatever. But I think there is a much larger community of people who are just fans that in the intermittent periods between updates to their favorite game or the next game on the, you know, that comes out officially, they could be filling that time with a lot of this work because a lot of it is so good. So yeah, that's a great reminder. Then next we have Concord Stories, an expansion-sized Fallout mod project using the world repopulation system of Sims Settlements 2. Now, this is interesting to me. Allowing the player to feel the wasteland growing back also adds new quests, items, full-fledged companions, and a new radio. So the premise here, and you can go look this up on ConcordStories.com, and you can see more details about this, but they're basically building off the Sim Settlement 2, and correct me if I'm wrong about any of this stuff, because I'm sure you are more tuned in on this than I am, but Sim Settlements 2, it's a wonderful mod system that expands the settlement system in Fallout 4. And they're taking that, and they're allowing you to move that another step forward to try to transform the wasteland as a whole over time.
Exactly.
Am I getting that
just
right?
Like Sim Settlement, just like Sim Settlements does, because the initial Sim Settlement was just a settlement framework.
Right.
And then with Sim Settlements 2, they added a story and quest line, and then there was an expansion, and there were battles and stuff like that. One thing the Sim Settlements team has done, which is Kingath Creations, now that you know they work together, but he brought in a lot of modders onto that, and a lot of modders got their start working on Sim Settlements, because one of the fun things you could do was create these small plots for Sim Settlements that would pop up. Have you run Sim Settlements in one of your games, Tom?
I've dabbled with it a little bit, but I haven't leaned into all the systems.
Because if people who play on console can play Sim Settlements 1, and like I said, that is a great building framework. But once you get the story, Sim Settlements 2 and stuff like that, it's been a little bit too large to be able to add into your console playthrough.
Yeah, it's getting big. Yeah.
When we get that additional mod space they've been teasing us about.
Oh my God. For,
5 months now. No, it's funny. Todd actually addressed it in one of the interviews he did today, specifically just talking about one of the reasons why they're taking their time with it is because they don't want to nuke people's installs. Because while there are people who are into modding and up on what happens when you do things like grow the mod space and are aware of everything I've loaded, the majority of people will just be like, wait, my game stopped working.
Yeah, I updated my game. I did the big new download. Why doesn't it load anymore? Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, you'll need, for instance, on PC to change the script extender, or you need to wait for some of these mods to be updated if they hook into the version number, something like that. But in the case of this mod storage expansion, it's actually going to have to completely wipe the mod space. So everything you have downloaded from mods will currently need re-downloaded.
Yeah.
And they want to make that as easy as possible.
It makes sense, because that's how they run best. Like if you're working on a PC and you're doing a whole, you're downloading a whole Wabbajack setup or whatever. Anybody who doesn't know, Wabbajack is not just the Sheogorath's weapon that turns things into random stuff.
It's 500 gigs. No, I'm just
but it's a name for a collection of ready to install with minimal effort mod packs that sometimes have thousands and thousands of mods in them.
Right.
And if you're going to go from one of those to another, the actual Wabbajack system will take the base game, move it to a completely different space on your hard drive, and then load in the mods in that space, which is found, like, you can't do that with a console because you don't have that much hard drive space. So you have to just wipe it and reinstall from the beginning to make sure everything's loaded correctly in the right order.
Exactly.
Without any weirdness, because everything's so fiddly. But this seems really cool, this idea that they're taking that and expanding it further into, you know, revitalizing the entire wasteland.
Yeah, they're a great team. They've been working on this for a couple years now. And like a lot of mods, it's one of those that evolves and grows itself over time. But you can play it in the interim. You know, there are versions you can download, and then there'll be an update in 6 months. And, oh, there's more to it now. It's pretty fantastic. And I really mod teams to do that. It's a real boon, because you get to come back and experience the game again and see what more they've added. It's funny. I just want to jump quickly to one thing you said earlier about not installing too many mods some of the time because you don't want to confuse what is part of
my perspective as somebody who has to talk about the lore every week is keeping it straight in my head,
and that has become a little bit more fuzzy recently with the advent of the Fallout 4 Anniversary Edition. One thing about Creation Club, when those were officially published by Bethesda,
yes,
made by people, okay, are they canon, are they not canon? And now in Anniversary Edition, it's technically, you know, a seventh ESM there that you're installing as a full DLC, and the full DLC is equivalent to, you know, 140 some Creation Club items. So now if you're running into some of these wackier ones,
right,
are they canon? They're in the base game,
right?
You know, it's much harder.
I've loaded that stuff up and I've played around with some of it, and I'm like, at some point, I will play this game again and I won't remember which things were here the first, you know, few times I've played through the game, and which things were here once I updated it and downloaded these things. And there's part of me that is reticent to let that go. But there's also I think, and the longer I do lore shows, and maybe this is something I'm going to change my mind in the future, but the more I think the idea of a single solid hard canon is a misconception that we, the audience, are demanding from our media that wasn't placed there by the creators. And I say this in retrospect with movies, and I could probably do an entire hour long video on YouTube about this, but it's one of those things. So for example, if you go back, and this will be real quick, if you go back in time to like the 1980s and you have popular movies from the 1980s, no sequel to any of those popular movies from the 80s or earlier, or even the 90s, was 100% consistent with the previous film. They weren't, because they were more interested in telling a cool story in a good way, or a good story in a cool way, in order to get audiences to come see their film. So there are plot holes between, say, Terminator 2 and Terminator 1, Aliens and Alien, any of the Star Trek movies, you know, like none of them actually line up. But then we get to the end of the 90s and you have the prequels, the Star Wars prequels, where they were constructed by George Lucas to fit a narrative that he has told the story of for decades about how, well, the first movie was actually the fourth episode, the fourth chapter. And so these other ones fit into this story. And then you have the Lord of the Rings come out, and it's the same kind of thing. It's a world written by one author, and it's all absolutely consistent in the books. Well, not completely consistent, but as consistent as Tolkien can make it for his books after spending a lifetime editing and rewriting that stuff. And then we, now 20 some years later, after the end of the 90s, almost 30 years later, are looking through all the media we consume under this lens of scrutiny that all of it has to be 100% consistent all the time, or it's garbage. And I think that that's just an impossible task to put on the authors. And we should shoot for it. But when we don't hit it, it's not the end of the world. It's not, well, you know?
For sure. And that's when you have series like, you know, actually any of the Bethesda properties, we can just say, where it's not the work of one person.
Absolutely. And yes. It's hundreds of creators.
Yes. Or occasionally, the original creators are no longer on the project at all.
Right.
The original Fallout creators, you know, in this weird roundabout way, sort of actually have come back where they were Obsidian, and then now they're all on the same umbrella again.
Sure.
Originally Infograms or whatever they were. It's like, and I mean, Julien Lefay, you know, rest in peace, had originally moved on and wasn't part of the Elder Scrolls series. So like, they take parts of it, but then everybody has their interpretation that they're bringing as the new lore master, the new writers, the new dev team, whatever. And it's their vision combined with a world that exists. So it's like what originally started, I mean, probably the most well-known is for the Elder Scrolls is where Kirkbride had a direction for so many things. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that was kept, but turned in a different direction from clearly where he was going with it.
Right, so it's just like, right. And tamed down a little bit, or made a little bit safer.
And it's like, if it was just one author doing it or one creator, just say, we would probably end up with very different stories, but the reason where we are at with the series is because there's so many people crafting it.
Right, right. It's impossible to make that. And I'm sure somebody's going to take my words out of context, and somebody's going to say, well, Tom wants there to be bad stories in games. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is,
you want bad stories.
I want games to have bad stories. And what I am saying is that if something is slightly inconsistent, that doesn't mean it should ruin the entire game. There are still things to appreciate, even when there are inconsistencies.
In some series, I don't know, some popular series that might involve a scroll, they almost made an entire plot device around making that make sense.
Right, right. Dragon Breaks. Yeah. Yeah.
Lore is the kind of thing that can be consistent as an historical artifact. You know, lore is consistent in context as history. But the problem is that with these living games, with evolving games, with games getting updates, of course, that lore is changing.
Right.
And that's why there's a difference between lore and canon. Lore is like Merriam-Webster definition, particular body of knowledge or tradition, right? And that's historical data. Canon is essentially the established fact.
Right. And somebody has to define something as canon. There has to be an authority that waves a magic wand over this and says, this is canon.
And there's a current arbiter of canon, you know, and right now Bethesda and people there, when they come up with new things, they become the arbiter of current canon.
Right.
That's why you have things talking about Apocrypha. you know, not mm-hmm. from Apocrypha of Elder Scrolls, but right. like the Fallout Bible, the actual Apocrypha of the Fallout lore. Yes. And some parts of the Fallout Bible are considered canon, but for the most part, it's a reference. And if they draw upon it, they can and do.
Then it becomes canon because they put it in a game. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Despite being called a Bible, it's not exactly.
It's not exactly, yeah.
The real trap there, when lore and canon and consistency becomes a bit of a trap and a bit of difficult for people to work around, is when they fill in the gaps. Because lore is, mm-hmm. if it's historical data and info, they're like, well, what happened between this time and this time? And some people say, if there is no data, then nothing changed.
Right.
Or if there is, you know, this couple year gap, this is what I think happened. And it becomes believed by enough people long right. enough.
And turns into headcanon. Yeah, yeah. And you can see it. Thing. You can see it in the question. I know this is a whole side trail, but because we got to get back to the rest of this. But just for fun here, you can see it in the questions people ask, where they'll say things like, well, you haven't talked on your show about what happened 200 years after the bombs dropped in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I'm like, yeah, that's because there's nothing in any of the games that has happened in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Or maybe there was one reference by one side character once, but that doesn't mean I can do an entire episode on it, you know?
Right, but somebody from Minnesota really latched onto that.
But they really like that idea. And I love having those questions, but I also feel bad telling somebody that this isn't like real history where something definitely happened and we just need to go discover what that is.
Right.
Like, unless they put it in a game, nothing has happened. Like, there's nothing there.
It hasn't been created yet.
Right. It hasn't been created yet. And that's okay. But hey, moving on, we have 1140 was preview teasers with a bunch of different stuff. So we'll move on past that to Honey Liquor, an Argonian companion. Sneak peek into Honey Liquor, an Argonian companion, an upcoming creation for Skyrim. Check out the dialogue, the art, the weapons, and more. This is by Modding Goat, hosted by Veda Phoenix.
Yeah, Veda hosted a lot of them. So for some of these showcases we're talking about, someone on the mod team might be a streamer or might have a friend who's a streamer, but the majority of them we provide. So for instance, that's why I ended up streaming a number of them. Our friend Fergassier, I assume some people in the community probably know him. He's a fantastic Fallout streamer and YouTuber. He hosted some, and Veda Phoenix, she's not just a modder, you know, on Conquered Stories, Merry Modding Days, but mm-hmm. she does a lot of streaming too, so she hosted several of them, including this one. Honey Liquor, just another fun companion, fully voiced, you know, creative backstory, all that. And so as a work in progress, they wanted to show her off.
That's great. And Argonians are always fun. So that's super fun. And then next we have Starfield Creator Showcase. This is right up your alley with Starfield Lorecast. Sweet Pea 704 is joined by Miss O, Betamax 76, Pegasus, and Madrox, bringing an expanded showcase celebrating the new Starfield creations coming to our Bethesda community. And with all the big updates for April 7th with, oh man, it's going to be fun to dive back into Starfield and play some stuff that, like, a lot of us had hoped would be there from the beginning, and they've decided to add in. And I'm sure all of these mod creators are going to get a big bump from people coming back to Starfield and then checking out their creations. So
never been a better time to jump back into Starfield, y'all, but April 7th is when we're getting the next update. Free lanes, they talked about today. Terran Armada, we got more information on, but to the creator showcase. Yeah, so one thing we were putting this together, there was a distinct lack of Starfield. And I said, this will not do. So I reached out to Sweet Pea, and she's a mod herself, and she works with the Dark Star crew. Dark Star is a large overhaul mod for Starfield. And she regularly streams Starfield and will sometimes have other mod authors on. I'm like, let's put together a showcase for this. And that's why it's an expanded showcase, because reached out to several people, able to get four modders to come in along with her to talk through their stuff. Verified creators. Sunday, we mostly had verified creators joining us. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, not exclusively, but it was nice to kind of put them together as a thing for people who are more interested in the verified creator side or more interested in the Nexus and Overhaul side. Right. So, Miss O, with a wonderful Outpost modder. She does a lot of modules for Outpost especially. She actually started as a YouTuber before modding was part of Starfield, because as you know, we didn't get the creation kit till June 2024.
Yeah.
And she was doing YouTube videos about Outpost building. And then when the creation kit came out, she jumped in and started making modular Outposts. And so she's done one for Argos Mining, and now it just showed off one she did for Neon modular Outposts. I don't know if you caught any of this, Tom.
I didn't catch this part. No.
Really cool. You can build up against and onto the water, and you've got the glistening puddles on there. You've got all the various chasm bass related stuff, and the neon feel. Great mod. So oh, we had Miss O, Betamax 76, Pegasus, and Mad Rocks, all verified creators showing their stuff. And they tend to focus on ship parts, outpost parts, furniture, that sort of things was mostly what we showed for
the little nitty gritty bits and pieces that you.
Yeah. It was a great couple hours.
You could always use more of those in a game for sure. Mm-hmm. And then after that was Come Wander With Me, a Fallout New Vegas expansion mod featuring several new world spaces and expansive branching quest line. This one I pulled up over here, and there's a page on the Nexus mods page with there's already a demo for this available, and you can check out some more things. There's a prologue to the mod. You can go through 2 hours of content already for the demo and some other stuff you can check out. So another... another fun mod to load up for New Vegas. So there's plenty of those.
Yeah, that's one of the neat things. Things are in, you know, various stages of progress. So it's not, they are all works in progress we show for the most part, although sometimes people will also show some recent past projects. But a lot of these works in progress are playable. And this is one where you can download the demo and play some of it.
Yeah. And then you got to do the next two on the list, Fallout Upstate. And you mentioned this a little bit earlier. This is a fan film that's coming out soon.
They are aiming to have it. They're going to release it as a series a bit, and they're aiming to have the first episode out by end of summer. So soon-ish. It's the kind of thing where, as fan projects do, there was an idea long before it really started to coalesce. And initially, they were going to do it as a web series comic with friends. And, you know, that was with no funding. And then they managed to get some funding coming in. And Alexa Rader, who is kind of the mind behind it, he's a modder too. I mean, this is a great example of how the mod community works. You know, fans of the games who get into playing with a creation kit. And Alexa Rader has been modding since he was in high school. You know, he's in college now. So he's been modding for about 4 or 5 years. And as a verified creator, he started to get a little bit of an income from releasing some mods. He's done a couple. A lot of people might know his plasma musket, which, may I say, plasma musket a little bit better than the laser musket. Okay, Preston's laser musket. A lot of people aren't a lot of fans. They're just cranking it all the time. Like, Rangers are rushing at you. But the plasma musket is wicked fun. He did a bubble pop cola mod that's fun at Palmetto Imports. So he, you know, he learned the creation kit, starting making weapons, like I was talking about, and then getting into making more and bringing that love of... most Fallout fans, they want to see Fallout set in their area. You mentioned Minnesota earlier.
Yeah.
It's such a thing with a Fallout fan. He is from South Carolina, and so he's doing Fallout Upstate as Upstate South Carolina, not Upstate New York.
Yeah, that's my first thought was New York, and then I heard him talk about it, and he's like, oh, it's, you know, Carolina. So
a lot of states have an upstate. A lot of states have a north.
Yeah. sure. Yeah, because I was like, wait, this is like a New York mod? That's interesting. I was like, no, it's not. No, but that's totally fine.
But that was really fun. So we discussed his mods and the plans for the series. So we'll see how that goes, but it's coming together well. They managed to get some camera equipment and they're in the process of writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's cool. And then you did one on Fallout Unity, a quest mod that has revived and re-envisioned the resource San Fran and has turned it upside down. I caught part of this, but I didn't catch a lot of it. Yeah, tell me more about it.
It's got a little bit of a horror vibe to it. So Fallout and Starfield both lend themselves to horror. Well, really, I mean, Elder Scrolls too. There is a way to present horror in there in various methods. And they leaned into that hard with this. So they didn't get much into the storyline. And obviously, I can't reveal too much about it, except to say it's about the idea of a different evolving NCR, a section of the NCR that becomes obsessed with optimization of running things more rigidly, more structured, and there are certain chems they're taking to do that, which tend to reduce free will. So there's that happening, and then there are multiple factions. There's the Xi as well, and because of course we haven't dealt with the Xi that much in the games, but you know we know about them, and so their culture and their councils and stuff, and then another faction coming in that they don't want to discuss too deeply. But there is a nice 3-4 faction lore story there, much in a similar vein to New Vegas. So this will be a mod for New Vegas, by the way, for San Fran. It will be for New Vegas. A lot of these are, you know, it's interesting because one of the things about mods, you might hear about them, you're like, oh, but which game is it in? You know, and a lot of times people think, well, of course it's going to be in Fallout 4. That's the newest one that has mods. But no, you know, New Vegas has a really vital modding community. I'm sure a lot of your listeners, you know, play regularly. I know I'm actually in a New Vegas playthrough right now. So
yeah. It's, I mean, keep my fingers crossed that we're going to get the remake, the remaster version of 3 in New Vegas at some point. I would bet a large sum of money that they will be here at some point. I just don't know when. And I don't have behind the scenes official confirmation on any of that. It just feels like an obvious no brainer that they would just print money and people would love, you know, the Oblivion.
The Fallout 3 remixture is coming. Yeah.
It's gotta be
coming. Yeah. I mean, it's basically in the same document that proved that we already got Oblivion remastered. It's like, okay, well, yeah, that one was kind of
they're there.
A whoops in advance.
Yeah. And that's my hope, is that like stuff like this, I know that they're mods and so but a lot of them pull a lot of the same assets from the base game and they just reorganize them in order to build quest lines or new locations or whatever. So I'm hoping stuff like this still works in a remaster version. Then we can go back, hopefully with a game that doesn't crash as much, that also has revised, you know, updated graphics, and be able to play through a lot of these mods. Yeah.
Most things won't. As we know with the Oblivion remixer, there wasn't much you could dovetail in, because even though it's on top of the base game, and there are some things you can tweak, running on multiple layers like that, they have to, while they keep the core, there's a lot of stuff that they cut out.
It's a lot. Yeah. So,
I mean, just to your point though, like, I really feel like, especially Fallout, I mean, all of the series, like you said, kind of have that ability to have a horror element to them. Mm-hmm. I actually think that Fallout is best when it does just a bit of jokiness and more, this world is so screwed up and it's got like the horror element, but then like the humor is extra dark at that point, as opposed to some of the more overt jokey stuff they do sometimes. I feel like that's like the perfect setting when Fallout nails that. It's just like, this is very unsettling when you're like roaming around and it's just, and then you get, usually that's when
poppy,
I find
cheery music.
Yes. And that's usually when it's like, oh, it's even more unsettling now that you're trying to be jovial about it.
Yeah. All right. So we're down to the last one, Beyond Skyrim, Iliac Bay. Now the Beyond Skyrim project's been going for a long time. They've got multiple facets and locations and that sort of thing. Yeah, but this is Iliac Bay. It says here, a massive new lands project bringing the lands of High Rock and Hammerfell into Skyrim. And they've already added a number of locations that they've done some work on. I'm not 100% up to date on everything that's playable right now or testable. Some of them, they'll start with just like a little area, like a city or something, and you can go in and try that out.
They did Bruma, was one of the first ones people know they might have played Beyond Skyrim Bruma. And that's, you know, that's fully complete for what it is.
And this seems like a big group with different subsets that are doing different zones. But I would imagine that this one it's got to be tricky with the speculation that the Elder Scrolls 6 is probably going to be in the Iliac Bay, or at least in Hammerfell, or maybe Hammerfell and High Rock, you know, like, so like, this will be interesting to see, okay, what is their version of this in a Skyrim engine, as opposed to maybe the version that we get for Elder Scrolls 6. I'm sure they've thought through that, but I love what they're doing as a team to try to actually build out basically all of Tamriel. And that seems like, is that the stated goal? I don't know if I've read that somewhere, or it just seems like what they're doing.
In the same way Arena was, you know, not necessarily building out all of it in a contiguous fashion.
Right.
But building out specific portions in a way around the other games. So, for instance, talking about Iliac Bay, they're going Strathmacor, like the southern coast, and then up, you know, on the northern end of Daggerfall and stuff like that for the Iliac Bay regions. They're actually kind of surrounding what's likely to be the setting of the next game. I don't know if they're doing that on purpose because of the game or that's just where they started.
Yeah.
But they're doing that with some of the others too. Like they're working on Elsewhere and Valenwood and such.
Yeah. I was going to say, I know the Elsewhere and Valenwood ones, they've been embroiled in for a long time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this seems really cool. I like this idea of like going to these other locations that we haven't been to. And clearly the main team isn't going to have time to it takes them so long to make a game. We're not going to get all of the different locations across Tamriel anytime soon. So to be able to at least experience that in a mod format is really cool. So.
Exactly. But that wraps up the weekend of C3 this year. You know, every year we've got, sometimes we show the same mod a couple of times, you know, how it's evolved over the last year or two. Sometimes we have new mods each year. You know, like I said, we were privileged to show Fallout London back in the day and several others coming up. Sky Oblivion, I mean, this time next year, maybe it'll be out. Maybe they won't be there again. Or maybe they'll be talking about their first DLC for it. Who knows?
Oh, man. Yeah, who knows? All sorts of fun things. Yeah, make sure that you check out these mods if you are curious about any of these. Some of them are PC only, but you can always load up creations on console and see if some of these verified creators have posted new things that you could try out on your console versions. So there's all sorts of ways that you can get involved in this. And of course, all the way down to joining their Discords, getting involved, learning how to do modding stuff yourself by just starting, maybe making some textures or modeling a hammer in a 3D program of some sort. You know, there's all sorts of things you can do to get involved there. But Jess, thank you so much for taking the time to go through this. I'm so glad that you're involved with this community and helping out. There's so much to the community, and I wish I had more time and actual ability to be involved with everything a little bit more personally. But some of this stuff I just have to sit back and kind of enjoy through other people. Anything else you want to share before you head out?
About Community Creations Con? No, that's pretty good. Just look forward again next year. We definitely plan on doing it in 2027 as well.
Yeah, again, in the middle of March, same kind of time. Same every
February
year?
Or March. The last 2 years it was February. This year it was March. This seems to be a slightly better time for people. We don't want to, you know, creep up on top of things too much, but some of it always depends on release schedules too, right?
Sure.
We get some exciting news about next spring.
Yeah. And where should people check out what other stuff you're doing? What else do you have going on?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at SleepIsForTea or Blue Sky. Of course, I do the Starfield Lorecast occasionally. Been a bit of a hiatus, but we have a couple episodes planned right now. And I also host the Fallout feed over on my ASA podcasting network and a number of other shows. I do Twitch, I do YouTube, the usual.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Jess. And Lotus, anything, any final, and I'm stumbling over my words because I'm trying to say three things at the same time. Any final words?
Together, so.
Yeah. Anything else you want to say? Any final words?
No, I definitely just say, you know, check this stuff out. It is a lot of fun. As most people know, I'm not even the biggest modder, but I like to check out some of the more of the verified creator stuff, just because I do like to see. Oftentimes, I feel that that's that one step before it becomes sort of part of the world, because we've seen it happen so many times. And I find that part really fascinating. And some of these projects are just like unbelievable when you see what people do with these things. And honestly, as much as, you know, the trend in games oftentimes is live service, we've got to keep people playing our thing, we need engagement as high as possible. It's weird that one of these things that Bethesda has been so good at for so long is opening up their games to be modded, and they essentially have engagement numbers that make companies that have their entire business model around engagement trying to crack the code that people are just like, oh yeah, no, I just played the single player game for 7,000 hours, 10,000 right. hours, whatever. And it's because there's so much you can do. It's so open. And when you get a community of people interested in that and just expanding this world amongst themselves, you get these things where it's just like, when you look at how old some of these games really are, and the numbers of people just playing on one platform are still staggering. It's wild how much these games just have a sticking power because of mods and the communities and people making these games essentially their own.
Yes. Yeah. It really does keep the games alive in between releases for other games. I mean, if it wasn't for the modding community, would this many people still be just, you know, waiting for the moment they give us any more information about Elder Scrolls 6 or Fallout 5, you know, like
100%.
Yeah.
And it makes you wonder. It's like, you know, so many of these games are just like, okay, you know, yes, this game's like, oh, yep, everybody has memories of a Fallout game or a Skyrim, which is just the most common one, but it's just like an Elder Scrolls game and stuff like that. And you wonder, it's just like, how much of the memories of the game itself and how much of the memories of it are actually all these things people have just done to keep this game alive that became their experience with the game.
It melds together really strongly. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Bethesda embracing modders. They really do foment that community by bringing them in. They are intrinsically involved in the development of the creation kit. You know, they welcome, with the Verified Creator Program, one of the reasons that was be able to work more closely with more modders, because they always did. You know, a lot of times, like the script extender team, they'll give them a little bit of advanced look at code, but they've done more. Verified creators now, talking about King Gath Creations again, but several others have released mods officially under the Bethesda Game Studios umbrella. Right. For instance, the Doom mod that came out that we had for Starfield. That was too. Verified creators are brought in on projects. So, you know, a little inside baseball people might find interesting. A lot of times they will give advance publicity and advance showings of the games, these events like with Starfield, to YouTubers, to streamers and influencers. But they're also doing that for verified creators. Mm. Verified creators had their own showcase on what was coming up. They knew before most of the rest of you, and good job to most of them keeping their mouth shut. So yeah. they're bringing in, there's a circle of trust there, and Bethesda willing to extend that trust, looking for feedback and having that back and forth has fomented that community in a way that other games, they really do have trouble replicating, because as much as people sometimes feel that Bethesda doesn't do everything that we would like them to do and things take too long, they listen to feedback a lot and they really try to work on things.
Yeah, their engagement with the community is why we can do our shows, for example. Yes. There are like I'm never going to do a Nintendo show because they're going to ban my use of any sounds or video clips from Nintendo games, you know, but like Bethesda is very, very pro working
with
creators.
They help us set up interviews.
Right, yeah. So like, all right. Thank you to all of them for that mentality, because they're smart enough to know that that benefits them and it also benefits us and it benefits the community. Everybody wins. So let's just all keep enjoying the things that we enjoy together and support each other. So very well said. Thank you again for joining me, Jess and Lotus, for being here and being on the Fallout cast, because this is going up on both feeds. So
yeah you're hey, on both. Everybody. I like Fallout too. I also like
Starfield. So we'll be back next week. I'm not going to do all the shout outs from Patreon. If you want to support the show, go to Patreon, look it up on Patreon. You can join us over there. I'll do all the shout outs and stuff and catch up on that next week, because this is a little bit of a longer episode. And until next time, stay safe out there and go find a mod. Go download something somebody put a lot of passion into and learn why it's awesome and enjoy it. And then send them a little thank you note or something. You know, there's like, heck, you can go on the Nexus mod site and you can send them a little comment in their little mod section and just be like, hey, man, this is awesome. Thanks so much. It'll make somebody's day. Anyway, thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. To plug into everything else we're doing, check out robotsradio.net. Reach out to me on Twitter at robots_radio. Check out the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where you can join me and a bunch of our other creators creating your podcast, starting a new podcast, or helping your current podcast grow. There's more information about that on robotsradio.net as well. And you can always talk with us and the entire community, over 2,000 people, on the Robots Radio Discord. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you. See you guys next time. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.